1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock. And I want to bring in Josephine right away. Josephine, good afternoon.
Katie, good afternoon to you.
Josephine, you were watching the match last night.
I was. I absolutely was. And when I rang this morning and spoke to your researcher, Rebecca, I said, because I was here on my own and I thought, I need to speak to somebody. I'm a very neutral sporting person. I love sport of any kind. Now, I did listen to the show on either Thursday or Friday. I sat in my car with my granddaughter listening to it.
Just in case anyone else missed it, Josephine, this was a programme where we had a very, very passionate debate about why some people feel they can't support England when they play, why some Irish people have a difficulty in that department.
Yes, and I listened. I actually didn't want to ring in, but I did listen with great interest, as you said, to the passionate debate. And a lot of people were saying, you know, it was get over yourself, like that's history, like it said, it's gone. And I thought, well, it is. The people that did all those things years and years ago are gone, long gone. And let's just do it as a sport. That's what people were saying. And it was a very strong thing that the Irish against the English. I love the English. I've worked there. My husband has worked there. And all of that. So I just listened and I took my own views from it. But, Casey, I watched that football last night. And I think anybody that watched it would not be able to come on Liveline or any other programme today and say that the fear that people have and the I don't use too strong words about the behaviours after what they say should be sport. That's what they were saying the other day. It's about sport. Let's do it. Last night was about sport. I never saw such an extravaganza. My heart was bursting just watching the excitement. The penalty shootout, I was on the floor.
We all were.
On the floor and I thought, oh my God, there's no words to describe the passion of both teams and everybody in the stadium in Wembley last night. And it fast forwarded to Italy winning. And I wanted to cry with what followed. And I still do. I feel so, so sad. And I want to say that the fear and the feeling behind why people do not support the English when they don't support. And I was totally neutral last night. I'd been quite happy if they won. But when they didn't, Katie, and they came up on that podium that was so beautifully set out, it was beyond words to describe it. And the second, there can only be one winner on the night. Most of those players did not even allow the medals that they were presented with in a very professional manner. They didn't allow the medals to even hit their chest. They whipped them off. To me, it would have been more manly to step aside and not even go up and accept a medal. That's what I felt. I also felt there was one young man there, maybe one or two, but there was one young man in that team that stood out. He looked at his medal and he kissed his medal, and I'm not talking from a religious point of view, and he left the medal on him and held it on his chest and he walked off. And he, for me, was the only one that stood out as a role model for young children around the world. So I just...
Did that really upset you that much, Josephine?
It did. It absolutely did. I just thought it was a terrible arrogance to people. They just wanted to win. And one great speaker once said, like, we all need to lose from time to time because we don't learn anything from winning. And we do need to lose. But I think that was bad enough, Katie. And then this morning I watched what happened in Leicester Square last night. And there's just no words.
Oh, yeah, they were just terrible, terrible scenes from Leicester
There's
Square.
There's no words. Yeah. People have surely been hurt in that last night. Somebody could have been killed. I could have a son or a daughter or, you know, a relative or a friend living there. And I would fear for their lives. That's not sport and it's not history for sure, Katie.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be with you on that one. Anyone who saw it, and there was a lot of footage on social media overnight and also outside Wembley and people breaking through the barriers there and people being kicked on the ground. Really, really shocking scenes.
I was almost ashamed to be human because these are human beings that are doing that. Now, I said to Rebecca this morning, I'm very blessed that I work in a school. And you know, sport is a huge part of education. And, you know, you'll see 9 and 10 year olds when they don't play by the rules. They're, you know, they have to step aside until the next turn to do it properly. But those young boys and girls, like, they love football. And these people, international heroes, have a wonderful platform to, you know, to be a role model for those children. So you, on one hand, you're trying to teach them this is how you play sport. You know, be a good loser, because otherwise nobody will want to play with you going forward. We do it with our own children and grandchildren. You know, and that's what those people should, they've been given that platform to do that and teach those. But on one hand, you're teaching these, this is what you do. And then they all look at this last night. All the children were all watching that, I'm sure. And that's what they saw.
So, but would you cut him a bit of slack, though, Josephine? It was like they had just suffered a huge, massive disappointment. To go out on penalties and the last penalty spot kick the way they did, you know, they were entitled to feel devastated.
Yes. And I, do you know what I think? I think it's the cruelest way. And I don't think I would never, I don't ever agree with it. We watched Italia 90 in 1990, and the hair still stands on the back of our neck when we hear the nation holds its breath. It's awful. And it should never go to that. But this has happened before without penalties. That's my point. It has happened many times without a penalty shootout. It wasn't down to the penalty shootout. And I think even if England won, I don't think the behaviour will be any different. And that's probably a very sad thing for me to say.
You mean the behaviour of the fans now rather than the team?
Oh, not the team, the fans. The fans. The fans, absolutely the fans. You know, I mean, I wouldn't want to be part of a team if my fans behave like that. I wouldn't even want to be part of a team where fans will behave. I understand the disappointment. But I mean, to go from being disappointed to, you know, if the Italians went out on the last one, would they have done that?
Well, OK, stay with us, Josephine, because I want to bring in Dick. Dick Redmond, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I think any fans will know that name, Dick, ex-kitman for Republic of Ireland. What did you think about that last night?
I was absolutely disgusted at the players taking their medals off straight away. The message it sends out to kids is absolutely terrible. And we'll see the results of that in a couple of months' time when young kids are winning and losing cups and leagues and their reaction. It's an honour to get to a final, any final, no matter what age group you are, what standard you are. You're the best at that standard and you get to a final. And if you lose, you know, you take your medal and you put it around your neck and you respect the opposition and you respect the competition. And I was just telling you earlier today, 4 or 5 weeks ago, when Manchester United were beaten in the Europa Cup final, every one of them took their medal off. It was absolutely shocking to see. And a week later, Man City were beaten and every one of them kept their medal on their neck. You know,
yeah, so I was wondering, yeah, because I did see it and it did strike me last night watching it that I hadn't seen it quite as overt as that. Like, it was almost like a disgust at the medal last night.
No respect to the competition. That's what it's shown. Mm. It's a terrible lack of respect to the organisation, to the competition, to the opposition even. You know what I mean? Because I'm sure if it was the other way around, England wouldn't be taking the winners' medals off their necks. You know, it goes that too deep. To take it that little bit too serious, it should be an honour to get to the final. And I'll bet you every one of those medals will be up in the trophy cabinet at home. They won't be putting them in the drawer.
I just think we went from such a, like, that had been the story. The story was get to the final. That was going to be a huge prize in itself. And then they could relax because they had gotten over the big hump, you know, they'd managed to make it into a major competition final, you know, after all those years. And then that.
You knew that. Yeah. And then what happened in the stadium, during the game and after the game, you know, shocking scenes. Yeah, well, like, you don't want to brand so few, but there isn't so few. There's an awful lot. Everybody says it's a little minority, but there's an awful lot out there causing trouble. And that is absolutely, you know, there was could have been people seriously injured there last night, especially with the crush. We all remember Heusel, we all remember Irox, we all remember all the other crushes. And that could have happened last night when they stormed into that stadium.
It did. That did look, of all the footage I saw on social media overnight, that scene there where it did look like there was a potential crush situation developing.
Yeah, because they were all rushing to one little entry point.
Yeah.
You know? And then I saw one steward kicking three people, which I thought was incorrect because the steward's there to try and control. But I saw him swiping it and he caught three people going who were running past him. And that was not the way to deal with that. But I hope he's dealt with properly. But the amount of people that probably did get injured or could have got injured or could have got seriously injured is frightening. And even in the scenes in Leicester Square, my God, the game hadn't even started.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think, but anyone would have seen that there was incredible queues for pubs in London from like mid-morning yesterday. So, I mean, that was only going to end up one way, really.
They were going to be well tanked up by 8 o'clock in the evening, weren't they? Mm-hmm. You know?
This is not, though, but to be fair, let's be fair, Dick, this is not unique to English fans.
It's what?
This is not unique to English fans.
No.
This carry-on.
No.
You know, and it just happens to be what we're talking about today. But this is something that's, you know, it's part of the football story.
Yeah, but they need to get over that. Everybody needs to get over that football. The Russians, the English and all that. They have their own little gangs. Get over it. And, you know, as that lady said, it's about sport. You know, and sport brought everybody together there last night. And then ended up dividing people. Because I'm sure there's Italian people now that just hate the English more over what the actions they're seeing. You know, it would have been amazing to see England winning it and the reaction then after they won it. But they need to be able to take defeat and to take it gracefully. And that's a problem that goes around there. People think they have the God-given right to win things. But when you're beaten, you need to be able to accept it gracefully.
OK, Dick, will you hang on there? I want to bring in Edward, Edward Cummins. Good afternoon, Edward.
Hello, Katie, how are you?
Yeah, we spoke on Thursday, you were on that programme, part of that passionate debate we were talking about.
Yeah, well, I was kind of caught between two camps because I have Italian relations and I have lots and lots of English relations. And I was on WhatsApp talking to them throughout the week building up to it and I just said, I hope just the best team wins on the night. And I think English supporters, those who are real English supporters, should be very proud of their team. Because I thought they played very well. They're a very young team. And obviously the scenes after the match were disgraceful. But, you know, people talk about, you know, them taking their medals off. Well, if you look back at most Irish, particularly in rugby and all that, and soccer, we have never got to the stage of getting a medal. But when the devastation of losing in the final of a major championship, it's devastating, I would imagine. I've never experienced it. And there's a lot of disappointment. And I've seen throughout my years of watching sport, whether it be the Heineken Cup or whether it be the European Championships or whether it be any sport, fellas do take their medal and they're so disappointed. They don't put their medal on. It's not a disrespect to the medal or to the championship. They're just so bitterly disappointed. And obviously when the dust settles down and the furore goes, everything, they look at their medal and say, yeah, I'm very, very proud. But in that moment, when they're defeated and they know they're defeated, it's a bittersweet pill to swallow.
But Edward, have you ever, I can't remember anyway, certainly, and I think there would be a huge international furore if it happened, say an Olympic silver medalist, you know, being that dismissive of their medal?
Well, that's a different thing because the Olympics is a different thing altogether in the whole ethos of, because it's an amateur sport. You know, people forget that. The Olympics is an amateur sport. You'll have like Djokovic might be playing and all these great tennis players. They don't get paid. It's for the honour of playing. But
what is the difference though? It's about having surely respect and being a good loser. And
yeah, it is. But you know, the thing about sport is it's a very human thing. It's individual. We tend to block everybody together. We have 12 players or 11 players on the soccer team, and we expect them all to react the same. We saw one guy there, oh, listen to him, he kissed his medal and he kept it on. And that shows good character, absolutely. But not everybody's the same. Everybody have these different expectations of what they achieve and what happens on a football pitch. And you've seen the lad who missed the penalty, like 19 years of age. He was completely devastated and there was no going to reconciling him. Maybe it will take months to get over that. And we talk about soccer. You know, you think on English, there is a small percentage of English fans, and we've known the domestic problem they had in England in the 70s, 80s with hooliganism. But you take a situation that happened in the World Cup. It was one of the South American teams lost, and one player made a particular mistake. He was assassinated when he got home to his country in South America. You know, that's ridiculous. And what happened last night after the match is disgraceful. But that is not the majority of the English fans. That's a minority. It may be a sizable minority, but 95% of English fans were gutted last night and they took to their feet because it was a very close match. And people want to really get a reality check. In this, one woman there I was talking to said she's finished with the English fans. She would not, but what means she's finished with them? You know, how can you make a sweeping statement like that?
Okay, let me ask her. Josephine, how can you make a sweeping statement like that?
Well, no, I didn't. It wasn't me that actually said that, Katie. But anyway.
Well, you said something kind of close to that, Josephine. Well, I think.
No, what I actually said was I wasn't running down the team because I, like that, like Edward has just said, I worried for those young boys last night that missed those penalties. There probably are no words to describe how they would feel. But what I said was, what I wanted to clarify about last week's programme with this one was I was just very passionate that, for me personally, I'm only speaking for myself, that it's not about a divide between Ireland and England. That was one point I wanted to make today. And to answer Edward there, what I said was, it is not the team, it is their followers that and their behaviours that have created an awful lot of this. Now, I understand what she's saying about the disappointment. None of us know it at that level. But at least accept your medal, and some of those young players should have been ecstatic to get to that stage of a football final. To accept it, then perhaps when you're gone, take it off. I understand they whipped them off. Yeah. Sorry, Edward, I felt for them. I wanted to cry, but it was the way they whipped them off, as much as say, I don't want this. And I understand what you're saying, but try and send out. They're on a wonderful platform around the world. I would be very proud to have any of my family on such a platform. Passions run high, but I still say we need to learn as we go. Look, I'm only going to say this very quickly. I'm from the west of Ireland. I'm from Galway. Dublin, and I'm not changing the subject, have been winning the All-Ireland for how many years. They are wonderful footballers. We have to admire them. We have to accept that they win, and they've won for 6 years. I would like to see maybe Mayo winning after 60 years. But we laugh and we cry together and we celebrate when Dublin win the All-Ireland because they've won it outright. And I think this is missing in this level of football. I said we work with young children, and the message being sent out in a very troubled world today is wrong. And these adults should be professionally trained in every way to be able to cope a little bit better.
Okay, no, I want to bring.
Something which is very important. People are forgetting. They're focusing on the negative. When you look at Gareth Southgate's response after the final whistle, and how he went to console that young lad who missed the last penalty, and how he himself was in the same position.
Well, I was going to say, if anyone knew how that felt, it was Gareth Southgate. Yeah.
Yeah, but his maturity, he had experienced the same thing. He had come through that fire, and he realised and he knew exactly how they felt, and that comes with experience. England had a very young team, and I think they will go on and achieve great things, hopefully.
Please God, yeah.
I'm being reminded here that Jose Mourinho once flung his runners-up medal that he got with Chelsea into the match after the crowd.
Well, look at Muhammad Ali. You're talking about Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali got his gold medal when he came home from America because he came home still to biasness and racism, and he threw his gold medal into the river.
Well, that was a very specific thing, though. And actually, Edward, it brings me to the point I want to get to, because he did that because he was refused service in the local restaurant because of the colour of his skin. Hang on. I really want to bring in Jerome, because I think Jerome is Jerome, good afternoon. Do I have Jerome?
Can I come in?
Yes, you do. You do, Katie. I'm here.
Yeah, Jerome. That issue, the issue of the racist abuse that was targeted at those three young men last night and overnight, shocking.
Yeah. Shocking, and it's the continuation of the amount of shocking abuse and incidents that are, you know, that continues, you know. Abroad there last night, but, you know, it's everywhere. You know, it's here in Ireland as well. So,
would you explain people why you have a particular insight into this, Jerome?
Well, we've just had an incident within our basketball community in regards to racial abuse through social media. And the abuse is actually directed at the English footballer, Rashid Sterling. So I've just come off of really that incident. And then on the back of that, we've just had last night's terrible, terrible situation there for those three players. My heart goes out to them.
How common is it, though, within the basketball community for you know, racism to rear its very ugly head?
It isn't. It isn't common. Thankfully, it isn't. Nowhere near as prevalent as it is within the English Football Association there. But, you know, any amount of it is unacceptable. But like I said, thankfully, it hasn't reared its head in basketball.
Except from, of course, as we know, that incident with the CEO of Basketball Ireland, who, of course, absolutely, we should say straight away, was not in any way intended as a racist incident, but was taken up that way by some people. That comment by Bernard O'Byrne that Black Dives Matter, that was put on a Facebook page last week.
Yeah, but I'll be honest, Katie, I didn't really want to come on to talk about that particular incident. I just wanted to talk about how it kind of relates to what has happened to those three footballers. And again, the you know, really the responsibility that has to be taken regarding these incidents. I mean, it's been, you know, the reaction by different the FAA, the associations there, by, you know, the social media companies in regards to what we have to do to really fight and continue to work at stamping all of this out. And that's, you know, that's what, you know, I'm really just concerned about. What, you know, what more are we going to do about this? You know, I mean, I'm thinking about, in one sense, you know, I don't want to call it lip service where people are condemning the actions of these individuals and all, but, you know, I know for a fact we need efforts being made to where things happen. I think about the New York Central Park incident with Amy Cooper. I don't know if people are aware where she was convicted of a racist criminal conduct and criminal act against a African-American out there bird watching. Well, she ended up losing her job because of that. Now that's, you know, that's what I'm thinking. What sort of action is going to take place where we can, when the Metropolitan Police in London are saying they're going after trying to find these individuals, once we do find them, then what other action can take place that can really send a message, you know? And, you know, to bring it even closer to home when it comes to action, I think about we are not removed from our own Kerry teenager who racially abused Ian Wright. He didn't get convicted, but trust me, he and his family do not want to go through that criminal process that they had to go through, and he doesn't want to. And I'm sure that has cemented a lesson for him and for many others who followed it.
Okay, will you stay with us, Jerome? I need to take a break, but yes, we're sticking with this after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We've just lost Jerome there. We might get him back. But meanwhile, I want to bring in Katrina. Katrina, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, you're based in London, Katrina.
Yeah, I am. I actually work in the most local A&E to Wembley. I've worked there for 16 years now. And basically, I wanted to ring in just to talk about the racism and the violence, because this has been happening for a very, very, very long time. But it's not, might not be a popular opinion, but I'm looking at friends on Facebook today, you know, saying how disgraceful it is and saying, you know, it's unacceptable that they let themselves down. But then come the soccer season, they'll be putting on their Man United jerseys, their Arsenal jerseys, their Manchester, you know, and they'll be supporting these teams. And nothing will be said, but I witness on every single Saturday what this is happening at a much at a club level as well. So we need to be delving into it a lot more than just the England team.
And Katrina, because, do you see the after effects of a Premiership match in your A&E?
Oh, 100%. I'll get a phone call in the morning to tell me how many fans. I get it for the concerts as well, but they'll tell me how many fans are going to be there, usually 80,000, just to have us prepped and just so that I'm speaking to the person that's going to be contacting me during the day, telling me who they're sending in. And we see, I can't tell you the fights, the people that are involved in fights that come in. We're seeing 13-year-olds drunk. We're seeing, we see a 37% increase in domestic violence when England lose and a 27% increase when they win. And that's true figures, you know, and that's what I've seen over the years. Football is...
Do you see that coming in the door of...
Yeah. My colleagues had a terrible night. I got a debrief this morning. Had a terrible night with injuries last night. Drunks, people just, you know... And it has, my point is it happens every week. That there's games at Wembley with the other clubs. So I'm hoping that this will open the Irish fans' eyes to the clubs that they're supporting. You know, they're putting on the jerseys of English teams, but they're outraged about what happened last night. This is happening at every single game. I went to, my husband supports QPR, I went to a game there a few years ago and they were playing Millwall and I had to have my deodorant taken out of my bag because it was seen as a weapon. You know, I've been outraged for years by the violence that these England fans and club fans have been showing. And I know it was on a wider scale last night because it was collective. It was all the fans coming together. But I just hope now it opens everyone's eyes to what is actually happening at every single game.
And is it every single game you see that?
Oh, yeah, every game, yeah. I've got friends in the London Ambulance Service and everyone dreads the games, yeah. It's on a smaller scale, but it still happens at every game.
Yeah, well, I suppose, you know, there was, as you say, it was on a very big scale
large
and on a
scale.
Very big stage last night because, you know, everybody was kind of holding their breath for it to some degree, I suppose. But,
oh, yeah. I mean, I get the outrage, 100%. I do get the outrage, but we need to be looking at the clubs as well. They need to deal with it at their level.
Yeah, you see, I do think there is definitely a double think here because you'll have plenty of people today, as you say, will be on their WhatsApp groups and on their social media saying what a disgrace these scenes were and English fans are a disgrace. And as you say, these are people who support English teams in the Premiership week in, week out. And you never hear them saying the Liverpool fans are a disgrace or the Man United or the Man City fans are a disgrace or the Arsenal fans are a disgrace. But there's an element of all those fans that are a disgrace, I presume.
They're the fans that were there last night, you know, all the clubs, really. I mean, but it is a minority. And, you know, my husband goes to football every week and comes home unscathed, no arguments, no fights, you know. He knows I'd kill him myself if he did.
But, do you ever worry about him going to the matches?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, all the time. Because statistically, men are more likely to get into fights and arguments. And it's the alcohol as well, isn't it? You can't prevent, you know, people drink. It's the alcohol of these things is the biggest problem. It's not even the fans themselves. It's because you see the people that sober up and then think, oh my God, what have I done?
I saw last night it was reported that every pub within a 5 mile radius of Wembley had to shut on the minute the whistle blew at the end of last night's match. Everything shut.
I believe that because of the crowds. And then I definitely believe that. We had an awful night at work last night because of it.
You weren't in last night yourself?
I wasn't, no. I usually on weekends I only worked at the Saturday days. So that's why I end up seeing a lot of the Saturday games all out. Someone put on our A&E WhatsApp group last night, it's not coming home, but it's coming to Nordic Park. That's the A&E I work in. I thought, oh my God, how true.
And were you talking to your colleagues this morning?
Yeah, I just got all the emails in about this morning about what it was like. And we just had injury after injury after injury and drunks as well. They weren't necessarily injured, but they were picked up on the street unconscious.
Right. Yeah. Well, that, as I say, anyone who even had a little sniff of what was going on social media, you could see what was happening there, and it was never going to be pretty.
It wasn't. It's like New Year's Eve. It was probably like New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Okay, will you stay with us, Katrina? We're getting a lot of people want to talk on this. Finbar, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Katie. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. Katie, just I suppose 3 points there, really. One would be that, seeing players taking off their medals sends out the wrong message, really, because like a lot of young people are looking to these players as role models, you know, and seeing them taking off medals sends out the wrong message, in my view. The other thing is that it's shocking to hear the booing that's going on at matches as well.
Wasn't as much booing, I think, last night, but I certainly could hear a little booing in the background for the Italian anthem.
Well, you see, what happened is the Italians knew what was going to happen, and I think that they started to really get very loud so that the booing couldn't be really heard, because we did hear the booing in the background, all right, as you heard here as well. But in other matches, like, it's very disrespectful to anthems, you know, to hear, you know, especially when times our anthems are played, that the booing starts. It's very disrespectful to a country, you know. And, like, I mean, they should be proud of their country no matter what level they reach. And, like, I've seen kids, like, I'm involved in community games myself, and I've seen kids getting all different kind of medals at different times, and they're so proud of wearing that medal, you know. It's unbelievable, like, to see this kind of being taken off straight away on camera.
But as it was pointed out, they're not the only team to do that, and in the Premiership, players have been seen to do that. Do you support any Premiership team, Finbar?
I don't. We are fans here. My son is a big Roma fan, so we are very much Roma fans. And he does support Newcastle as well. But, I mean, I don't as such follow soccer. I'm probably more a rugby fan. But I just think that, you know, it's lovely to see, you know, teams respecting. I mean, it was brilliant to see the Italian team lining up last night in guard of honour and leaving everybody through, you know, the officials and everybody else. I think that was a very respectful way of doing it. And, like, that is what the kind of thing we should be looking to, really, I feel. The other thing is that I think starting the match, the third thing would be starting the match, like, I need to talk at night, it's crazy, it's just too late in the day.
If people were in the pub from 11 a.m, I don't think, you know, an extra hour or two in the evening was going to make a massive difference, Finbar, was it?
Well, it just shows that, you know, what I've heard this morning, that so many bits of glass all over the place, and then you have younger people that are coming to the matches, and if they see all this in front of them, it's frightening, really, to be honest, you know.
It did look a bit hairy, I have to say, at times last night. Certainly, the immediate run-up to that match, it did look like, you know, things could go horribly wrong here, and I suppose we should be grateful today that things didn't, escalate to that degree. Will you hang on? I want to bring in Ken on that issue of the medals. Ken, good afternoon.
Yeah. Hi, Katie.
Yeah, what do you think about that idea of taking off the medal as being very disrespectful?
Well, I can understand it completely, because it's not the one you went out to play for. You went out to play for a winner's medal. So that's what you were hoping to get. It's all about the plaudits and congratulations to the winners. Let them wear their medals, and fair play to them. But you don't want to go around with a runners-up medal. And I would call it a runners-up medal as opposed to a loser's medal. They did very well, England, but they just fell at the last hurdle.
And you think it's perfectly all right for them on show, you know?
It's a massive
audience they had, all those kids watching them.
No, it's just the way the different minds react. They went out to play for a winner's medal. They didn't get a winner's medal, so I'll take this one off. But not everybody took off the medal.
No, that's true. And Josephine made that point, and she was talking about the player who actually kissed his medal.
Yeah, absolutely. They never expected to get that far. Fair play to them for representing their country and to the guys who took the penalties. They had the balls to do it. So, yeah, fair play. But they went out to play for a winner's medal and they didn't get it. Unlucky.
Unlucky indeed. Thanks for that, Ken. Mary, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. What do you think?
Well, I just felt the disrespect for the medal was what struck me most. I thought England played brilliantly. I thought Italy played brilliantly. But I'm looking at the fact that there was such a disrespect on a platform that every child is looking at. And it's under 8s, it could be under 12s, it could be the Euro finals, it doesn't matter. I just feel it was a management problem. There should have been a direction from UEFA. There should have been a direction from maybe both teams. You know, if it happens, you know, that we lose, how do we accept the medal? How do we wear it with every child watching it all over the world?
You're a school principal yourself, Mary?
Yes.
Where are you based there?
In Tralee, outside Tralee, Carlaghlin National School. It just struck me as I'm so proud of the English team and so delighted as well that Italy won. But what I couldn't believe is that all these children are watching it and all the effort they put into even getting on a team, being on the bench. Many will come second, many will come third, many won't even get onto the pitch. And the most important thing is the medal. And it doesn't matter what colour it is, even if you don't get it, you should accept it and realise that everyone is rooting for you. No.
But I wonder, do we give children mixed messages about medals these days? Because I know certainly with my kids, they if they're involved in sports days and all that, you get the medals for participating, and there's a sort of, it's sort of, you're supposed to be as thrilled about participating as you are about winning.
Oh, I understand that.
And aren't we devaluing the idea of medals because of the way we now deal with them?
No, Katie, I'm talking about a competitive competition.
Yeah.
So you've got there, you've got to a final, a semi-final, you're awarded something, and it was the disrespect to the actual medal, and both guys got to the final, and I thought they were absolutely wonderful, the English team.
But you think they let themselves down at that moment?
I think it's a management problem.
Oh, well, it was an individual decision, surely.
That's my problem. It should have been a management decision that this is what you must do. Many of them are professionally. They're all professional, well paid. This is what you must do. This is how you behave. You're on an international stage. Please accept your medal. Now, they can do what they like with their medal after, but not when they were there on the cup platform with every child around the world watching.
Yeah,
that was my problem. And that's the only point I actually want to make, Katie.
What if one of them wasn't, you know, willing to do that or play along with that?
Well, that's a management problem.
Right.
Without.
Okay, so you said they should have been under instruction.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that we will see a lot of this. I mean, I know it's quite common anyway, but I still feel there's nothing worse than to see, can you imagine a child pulling a medal off their neck and say this is worth nothing?
I know, but these were grown men though, Mary. You know, we can't absolve them of total responsibility for this. I'm not blaming the management.
Of course, but why are you not blaming them?
Because
No, I'm not, because I honestly believe it should be the directive.
Okay.
This is how you behave. This is the most watched match that has been watched, God knows, for how many weeks. And I just find it just let every single child down.
Okay. Do you know what, Mary? We got your point and thank you for it. Your line has kind of let us down there at the end, but I think we know exactly where you're coming from on that. And thank you. Thank you for making it for us. I want to bring in Tony Addison now, and I will go back to that point that Jerome was making with us earlier. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, Tony, you are... a lot more about the issue than maybe most of us would, that we were talking about, the racist abuse being directed at those players.
I suppose I do a little bit. I didn't hear entirely what Joe said, but my remark goes back, my comment, I want to go back to what that CEO of Basketball Ireland said. I was just disgusted at that remark. Absolutely just disgusted at that tweet. I'm a 65-year-old Dubliner.
Right.
And I left Ireland in 1986. And it just so happened that I'm black. I had a very good job in Dublin in the late 70s, early 80s. I worked in banking. I got great colleagues in banking, and I still have some great friends. But in the mid-80s, I left in 86 because my mental health wasn't good. I was getting a lot of abuse, casual abuse. Anyhow, I left Ireland.
Sorry, just explain to people, what do you mean by casual abuse? What kind of...
Oh, you're walking down the street, somebody drive by in a car, hurl, you know, abuse at you. And it didn't happen every day, but it was regular enough.
And this
you
was...
You go into a pub and be abused.
This was specifically because of the colour of your skin?
That's right. I mean, I can't think of any other reason for it. But, you know, so I decided in 86 that...
And just to tell people as well, like, this is 86. In the 80s, there were not that many... people of colour walking the streets of Dublin.
No, you could walk down O'Connell Street and you'd be the only one. And so in the last 35 years, I've come back to Ireland about two or three times on very short 2-day trips.
Really? Is that all you've been back?
Yeah.
Why?
Very, very short.
Why?
Well, I was working in America.
Okay.
I worked as a lawyer and as an attorney, as a banker in America. And I also worked as a lawyer, law lecturer in China. And economics teacher, business teacher at International High School in China. So I've left Ireland for 35 years, but I decided to live back in Ireland again. Uh-huh. And I was just amazed to see just walking down O'Connell Street was just an eye-opener for me, complete eye-opener. And I'm told the country has changed a lot. I haven't had the opportunity to get around because we've been locked down. I came back in March of 2020, and the economy collapses 2 weeks later. So we've all been in lockdown ever since, and I've never had the opportunity to get around Ireland. I keep on being told it's changed a lot, but I haven't really found out for myself yet.
Have you come back here to retire, Tony?
Yes, basically, yeah.
Right.
And I'm Irish, so I figure I'd come back to Ireland. And that tweet by that CEO of Basketball Ireland really got to me. It just came across to me as a self-entitled individual who could just flaunt that casual racism without any regard for how it affects others. Now, I don't know the man. I don't know his background. I know nothing about him. But that really got to me, because it's that type of casual throwaway racism that he just felt so entitled. And he was trying to be funny. I'm sure he was. He was trying to be funny.
And I have to say this because he has apologised profusely about this, and he has said he did not in any way intend it to have any racist overtones. I think he, as you say, he was trying to be funny, clearly, but missing the mark very badly. And just in case people are, missed this story last week, this is in response to a story on Facebook. I think it was a BBC story about Raheem Sterling. Obviously, a lot of controversy about that penalty after Raheem Sterling went down in the mm-hmm. penalty box mm-hmm. in that match. And he responded to a story in relation to that penalty that was later.
As a Dubliner, I get the wit of what he said.
Yeah, he responded
absolutely.
With Black Dives Matter was the response. He explained it as a lapse of judgment, obviously.
It's more than a lapse of judgment. Yeah. It's a complete disregard about the welfare of others. It's a complete, and apparently he's the CEO of Basketball Ireland. When I was in my 20s, early 20s, we had a great basketball program here in Ireland. I used to love going to the games. Mm-hmm. And we want to, and I'm not a basketball follower, don't get me wrong. I don't follow basketball. I don't claim to. But I did enjoy the basketball that was here in the late 70s and early 80s. And this guy is supposed to be the head of Basketball Ireland, promoting diversity and inclusion. He's put a mantle of racism all over basketball. That guy should resign as a matter of honour. There should be no investigation by Basketball Ireland required. As a matter of honour and principle, he should simply fall on his sword. You cannot, in my opinion, that casual, willful disregard for the feelings of others by a throwaway racism. And that, to me, it's just not acceptable. I endured that as a lot as a teenager. as a young guy growing up in Dublin. And to come back to Ireland and to have that thrown into my face by that tweet of his, it really got to me. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
It just got to me.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice, Tony. It clearly really got under your skin. Can you explain why, your gut reaction to that when you saw it?
Well, you see, he was trying to be funny. I understand that. But it's the self-entitlement that he thinks that he's allowed to do that without any consequence or without any regard to how it affects others. I'm told Ireland has changed a lot in the years that I've been away. I'm told that, 17-18% of the Irish population are non-Irish or not Irish-born. So there's a vast pool of citizens or people living in Ireland who weren't born in Ireland. And this guy is just giving, in his tweet, he's given the imprimatur to other yobs to insult people by, in my way of thinking, his statement empowers other people to hurl abuse at other footballers, at other young kids.
Now, I have to say, that is... To be
clear,
we know what he has said in relation to that, and has apologised and said it was a lapse of judgment, but that there was no racist intent whatsoever.
The horse has left the barn. Yeah. The damage is done. He should face the consequences of what he did. It was just a terrible, terrible, terrible remark.
Okay.
Now, that's just my feeling, and I just don't want to see that happen. Ireland is a wonderful country. We are a great people. We have a great heart. But we don't need people like him in power to put that type of negativity to young black kids growing up in Ireland today. I was just so surprised. Great to see. I'd just been out of touch, been out of Ireland for so long that I'm out of touch with what's going on. But when I first saw Bundy Aki playing rugby for Ireland, I thought it was amazing. I'd never thought I'd see a black guy playing for Ireland, stuff like that. So this is the type of stuff that I want to see as I get old in Ireland, a multicultural society. But we don't need to be pulled down by the likes of that CEO.
Okay. Thank you, Tony. Thank you for that. You're entitled to your opinion. We will take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Okay, on a different topic now, we'll move on. Stephen Fitzgerald, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
I was going to say, how are you? But it's not a good day for you, Stephen.
No, not a great day now. We have a water park here in Drumminier. We do all water sports, kayak and sup.
This is Drumminier in County Tip.
In County Tip, just outside Nina. But our insurance is actually up as of today, closed today. And we have to close up the water park, end of it. All the insurance companies are actually after pulling out of Ireland.
So how long have you been in operation there, Stephen?
Since 2016, so this is our fifth year.
And you've been able to get insurance every year up until now?
We have. Now, the premiums did go up in the last 2 years. We don't mind that. It was just the whole, last minute they turned around and said, we're not renewing your insurance, and that was it, really, because kind of you're on your own.
And how much were you, what kind of premiums were you paying in the last couple of years?
It went from 5,000 up to 25,000 with a 10,000 excess.
Ooh, 25,000 euro.
So
that's a lot of money.
Increase in the space of a year.
Yeah, a lot of money. But you're saying that even at that level, you couldn't get quoted for insurance this year?
No, not at all.
And what is going on in the insurance market then?
Being honest, we actually don't know. It's just kind of they're kind of coming for this sector. It's a nationwide issue, because we don't have massive claims gone in over the last 5 years. We only had one claim gone in 5 years, which where safety is our number one priority. But it's going to affect probably every water park in the country or anything that's inflatable. They just don't want to insure it.
Yeah, I'm having a flashback now to maybe 2 years ago when there was an issue about bouncy castle companies having difficulties getting insurance. And presumably this is in the same zone.
They're putting it in the same category, yeah. So it's bouncy castles and stuff, they're still going to have their issues with the insurance. They're still struggling to get it. But they're kind of moving on to the kind of water end of it now. So they're just basically saying that we're uninsurable.
And have you actually been in operation, you know, since COVID arrived?
We opened for 6 weeks last year and we had to shut down then. We'd shut down in August. We opened mid-July for 6 weeks.
Right.
We closed then in September every year anyway, so we started up then again this year in May. Then the May started June.
And today you're finishing for good,
and
are you closing down for good?
Well, we have closed because we can't get insurance. Now we're hoping that we will get it. We have one option left, but we're still waiting for them to decide. You know, we're kind of left in the dark, so we don't know what to tell our customers. We don't know what to tell people that are already booked in for parties. And
God, it's really tough, isn't it, Stephen?
Well, it's heartbreaking, really. Like, we're after pumping so much into this. We're after putting a lot of time, effort and money into it.
Yeah. And my understanding was with that new initiative that was brought in the last few months, where the Book of Quantum was looked at and we're making huge cuts in the amount of payouts that will be given for the various injuries. Is that not good news for your end of things, no?
Well, it is, but it's not really affecting us at the minute. Like, it's not really helping us any bit. You know, if we can't get quoted, we can't get insurance and we can't operate.
And are the insurance companies, like, acknowledging that you know, payouts are going to go down? And
they're not really acknowledging that. They're just saying that it's disgraceful the way the insurances are. They're admitting it themselves that it's disgraceful. That, you know, they're kind of, they're pinpointing people and they're shutting people down, like.
This is a problem, or well, it was before, with the underwriter, that the insurance companies here need an underwriter and that they're saying they're not willing to insure these kind of operations.
That's it, yeah. That's exactly it. And that's basically what happened. Our insurance company, the underwriters just said, no, we can't insure this anymore. And they pulled out of Ireland completely.
So are we looking at a situation where no water park or aqua park, like you have an operation there, will be in operation from now
on?
Well,
I've had five water parks contact me in the last 2 weeks asking us for help, saying that they can't get insurance and they haven't even got opened yet. And I was talking to another one today and they were saying, well, when our insurance is up next year, you know, we're going to be in the same boat. We have nowhere to go, like, we have no insurance. They're not going to renew it either.
God,
As far as I know, most of the water parks are insured by the same company, and that company is after pulling out now.
And so everyone is left in
the dark. Kind of left in the dark.
Yeah. And so literally, is there some element of your business that you can continue with?
We can continue with the kayak and stand-up paddle boards, pedal boats, rafting, you know, team building exercises and stuff, but We have that on a kind of a separate thing, but the water park is the attraction here. It's what people come, they travel for. And, you know, it's going to be a loss to the village as well. It's a remote village. There's pubs, restaurants, shops, there's food trucks here now, and they're all booming. But it's because of the extra tourists coming to the area. And, you know, we're employing between 15 to 20 young people, like between maybe 16 to 24, 25. And they're all going to be left redundant as of today.
And all because you cannot get your insurance underwritten.
That's it.
Oh, that's a terrible scenario, and it's extraordinary in this day and age that that it would that something like this could shut down a successful business like this. Is there other what are the people who are working for you today? Where are they? Is there other places for them to go? Is there other jobs around the area?
Well, see, a lot of them are lifeguards and stuff, so a lot of them will go get jobs in pools and stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of them going to be out of work. Like, any of the general workers we have here, they're going to find it tough to get work now and today. Like, you know, they're all worried, they're all approaching us saying, what are we going to do? Are we to weigh it off and you hire us on again? Which we don't know what to tell them because we don't know if we're going to get insurance.
God, Stephen, I wish you the best of luck with that, and maybe if anyone has any ideas or any thoughts on that, let us know, because that's a terrible loss and it shouldn't be happening.
Exactly, especially when they're pushing staycations and, you know, people to tour around Ireland and stay in Ireland. You know, this last thing we need the way the country has gone with COVID and everything.
It is indeed the last thing we need. As I say, let's see what happens. We put the word out there, see if anyone has any ideas for us. And we wish you the very, very best of luck that you'll be able to pull that one out of the bag. We'll have to take a break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now I want to bring in Sharon Wells. Sharon, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, Sharon. Summer camps and summer classes. There was a development in relation to those on Friday.
Yes.
Just explain to people who you are first.
Well, I'm a fibre and textile artist called Sharon Wells, but I run a shop called The Muddle in Bray, and it's in memory of one of my children who died suddenly from sepsis a couple of years ago, just before his 13th birthday.
Before his 13th? Oh, I'm so sorry, Sharon.
Yeah, just a couple of days before that, just a sudden illness. And
so you set up a business in his honour?
The Muddle in his honour. So The Muddle is a name that he used to say when he wanted to be in the middle of a hug, and he couldn't say the word middle, so he used to say The Muddle. So we used that name as a place. So the shop is it's an arts and crafts centre, and what I want to do is I want to bring the joy and the peace of doing arts and crafts to other people. So we will run it as a business, but you know, we're more primarily about building a community, you know, and to be there for people who just want to say nothing maybe and do a bit of crochet or that kind of thing, you know. So for me, it was a huge lifeline in the last 2.5 years. So, and I know, you know, how important it is for mental health to have, you know, different crafts. And the sense of being accomplishing something that you didn't think you could accomplish, I think, is a really, really important thing for people.
And especially for children.
Especially for children, yeah, because a lot of children will come up to you and say, well, I'm no good at this and I'm no good at that. And I just say, you just haven't found the right craft yet, or let's give this a go. And it doesn't have to be perfect. There's so many ways that you can come around kids with arts and crafts and things like this. And also, I mean, a lot of people come to us as a family kind of a unit, you know. So and they work together with their parents or brothers and sisters and things like that. So the idea... That's the idea, and that's the main basis for it, really.
That's what you want people to get out of it and why you're putting it on. So you had summer classes planned.
So we had summer camps planned. We were watching all year. We were actually meant to run classes in February, but then that lockdown happened. So we were watching the whole time. I mean, it's our retail model. If we don't run classes, we won't stay open for very long. So we said, OK, February, we can't do it. May, we were looking at that. We couldn't do it in May, but we reopened. So we were open for 3 weeks in December, and then we shut down until May the 17th, and then we reopened. So we were hoping in June, with the indoor dining, that we would then be allowed to teach the classes. So we organised. I put on some indoor classes, and there's only a maximum of five students. The shop is big enough for social distancing. I'm fully vaccinated. Kids have been in school, you know, so we were just, and I was running just a few little camps. One of them had only three students in it, and the ones I was running myself had five teens. And this was just for the next 2 weeks. I didn't want to book any more because I didn't know what was going to happen either, and I was just going to go 2 weeks by 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday, we thought everything was going ahead. There was a bit, you know, people weren't 100% sure. And on Saturday then, this information started coming out about, no, you know, indoor dining won't go ahead. And or does that apply to us? We were wondering, does that apply to us? And some people, we contacted loads of people that we know, other people that have similar setups, indoor classes. And some said, we're going ahead, I think it's fine. And some people said, I don't know, I think I'll put it off for another couple of weeks. And nobody really knew whether to, you know, what was the situation. So we needed the clarity. So I think the clarity came with the... I saw a clarity in the Irish Times report or something that said basically, I think, that... summer camps weren't allowed.
I think the Taoiseach was asked about this on Friday night, and he, I think it was actually when he was going in getting his own double, his second vaccination himself, but he said no, that there was very strong public health advice that summer camps, indoor summer camps, could not go ahead.
Indoor summer camps, yeah. And, so, you know, for, we don't have an alternative, and we also can't turn around in 2 days and try to... you know, come up with something else. I mean, I could have maybe put them all online. I was teaching online since February, so we could have had them online and not bothered with having them.
If you had had a bit of notice.
If we had some notice. Now, you know, maybe I can try to do that this week, but what I've said is, you know, it doesn't suit people. They want the kids to come in and have a bit of fun, and, you know, they don't want them online again. And so... I've started refunding people. So that's all I can do. And it's a big blow, really, because we're just waiting. I mean, I understand the COVID situation, that I would never put a child at risk, you know, so I understand all that. But I think we need a bit of little bit of consideration, really.
So and it just strikes me like there was you were going to be running very small classes.
Very small classes.
Yeah.
5 maximum, and social distancing, and... one of the classes is an hour and a half, you know, so, and the other one is 2 hours. So, you know, it's not like, they're not all day, and all these kids are already in school. They've just come out of school, you know, so...
I know that's the issue. I know a lot of people, I saw a lot of people commenting on this and saying, you know, look, all these kids have been in school together for months. What's the big deal? I know what the... The Taoiseach was saying when he was asked about this was that, you know, the Delta variant changes everything, and that this has made, difficult decisions had to be taken. But I can, from your point of view, you know, to find out about this a couple of days before you're about to start your camp.
Yeah, it just ties your hands even more. And our hands are tied as small businesses anyway. You know, we are like operating with our hands behind our back for the last while. And, you know, you just... And personally, like we don't qualify for any of the grants or any of the funding in our business because we set up in the middle of COVID, so we're not open long enough. So we get no support whatsoever. So we're going on our wits now, you know. So every week I'm going, right, how will I twist this, spin this so that I can, you know, keep the business going and make a few pounds just to pay the bills, you know. So... And I'm sure it's like that, and it's worse for other businesses. And also for the children, you know, you're saying that there are a load of outdoor camps and people are going to do football and all these different things outside now. But what about the kids that like to make stuff indoors and the
I'm also thinking, Sharon, what about those kids' parents who thought that they had some kind of childcare cover for the summer and are now finding themselves high and dry?
And they're all stuck.
A very, very difficult situation. And as you say, what can you do? I mean, you said some people are saying they're going ahead with them, though. Are you? Did you?
Well, a couple of days ago, we were asking and we were saying, what do you think? What do these guidelines mean? You know, and some people said, well, I think it's to do. They were saying, well, I think it's the same as last summer. And last summer, people were teaching classes. Now, we weren't open last summer, so that wasn't, you know, we don't have a precedent. So everything is the first time for us because we only really started business in November and we only opened in December. So mm-hmm. This is our first summer.
Are you just hearing you're just biding your time, hoping that the advice might change?
I don't think it will change at this stage. I'm just going to meet up with some of the tutors and see if we can organise things online and then reoffer a smaller version of the same class. But we'll have to send out kits to people and, you know, it takes a huge amount of organisation, you know, and as for myself, I'm kind of running the show, all of us, the retail shop and the online and everything. So, you know, I just have to sit down now and work out all the tutors, are they available, or all the people want to get their money back and refunding already. So but some people have said we'll take the online option.
Okay.
So we'll have to work that out for them, you know, and it's just...
I know, it's a head wreck. I can hear it from you, Sharon. It's a head wreck. I want to bring in... Best of luck with it, Sharon. I want to bring
in... Thank you very much.
Rob, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Katie? How are you?
Yeah, you were running, or going to run a theatre summer camp.
Yeah, I run the Civic Theatre summer camp. The Civic Theatre is a theatre in Tala, and we were running our camps about 8 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Week summer camp, dance, drama and singing and performing arts. We've already relocated because we knew we could buy social the way we needed to for the theatre for this year. So we've relocated to a big, huge sports complex so right. that with some outdoor space, and now seems to be up in the air. I have parents ringing me both work time who'd have siblings booked into the camp on Monday for 3 weeks. It's 10 to 4 each day. And at the moment, we just don't know what's going on because there is some indoor summer camps going on today.
Is there?
And yeah, there's indoor summer camps going on today. Yeah, and we just, do you know, Katie, the phrase we're all in this together is just kind of, you know, up in the air now because some people are going ahead indoors while others are cancelling. And I, at this very moment, I don't know whether I have to postpone my camp.
But was your camp supposed to be on today, Rob?
No, next Monday we start. We have 3 weeks from next Monday, Katie.
Okay, so you just don't know what to do. And you're saying some people are just not taking any notice of this advice and barreling ahead anyway?
Well, I don't know. There seems to be a very confused sector right now because there are sports training guidelines which say people can go indoor in pods of one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's there, but there's also other headlines that say summer camp can't go on. So if you're a dance class, you can go inside at 2 metres apart, but if you're a summer camp, apparently you're not allowed inside. And my issue now, Katie, is whether or not my public liability insurance will cover me if I'm inside and the guidelines say I'm not allowed inside.
So are you saying a dance class can, under the current rules?
A dance class right now, under Sports Ireland guidelines, with 2 metres apart from each individual pod, can go on right now.
But if you call that dance class a summer camp?
A summer camp, you're apparently closed.
Oh, sure, that's...
So it's like McDonald's and Burger King. Yeah. McDonald's is open, but Burger King's closed.
Ah, oh, that's very difficult. And have you tried to get
a... Katie, at this stage, you know, we're in the arts. The arts have been... We don't need to talk about how hard the arts have got this whole COVID thing. But I mean, now at this stage, I mean, we are vaccinated. The vaccines are rolled out. We are ready to go. I mean, at this stage, refunding all those parents, telling them they now have to find alternative childcare for 3 weeks. It's just... I can't get my head around it. And then you also, it's a business. So, Katie, my parents will go elsewhere to the ones who are open.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's really unfair. And also, Katie, if my summer camps are cancelled, I'm not back in work. My school is closed until September. And I can't go back into PUP because I'm off the PUP now at the moment because we're doing some outdoor classes.
Yeah.
So are the government going to pay... Are the government going to... for summer camp teachers and directors that if they cancel their summer camp, they will allow them to go on the PUP.
Yeah, we did try and get an answer from a government rep on Saturday in relation to this, and there didn't seem to be any new supports ongoing.
No, I was on to the Department of Arts today, and there was no clear guidance. There was nobody I could actually speak to. Everything was kind of put in an email, but like, when are you going to have a reply to an email when you have parents ringing you to know if their childcare is available next week?
Okay, Rob, I'm going to have to leave that one there.
Thanks.
But we'll put the word out there. We'll try and find out what's going on with that. That is a very difficult situation you find yourself in. But best of luck. I hope some clarity comes our way in the next few days. We'll take our last break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And that's it for today. Our BCO today was Daniel Keating. Padraig Kearney was on sound. Angus McAnally produced. Stand by now for Radar. See you up next.